Welcome to Earth's Mightiest Weirdos. I am out of practice. You cannot see us. There we go. How are you guys doing, everybody? It's a bunch of fun. We have not seen in the Nerd Life Network era at all on Earth's Mightiest Weirdos. Let's start in the top right corner.
I'm not a threat. Just an
Deanna Rob, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. One of my favorite Marvel quotes. I'm so happy with that intro.
I thought you would like that. I was making sure to not tell you about that. Down in the bottom left corner from Babu's frickin' podcast, Mr. Mike Ruby.
Hey, hey. Great to be back.
And then, of course, saving the best for last, Marky Mark.
Who?
Welcome back to the show, Mark. It is good to have you.
Glad to be here. I don't know about best for last. These are, wait, I got to forget best guys here. There we go.
A little out of practice, huh?
I know.
Katie is here. Sarah is here. We've got a lot of the old crew coming back together. It's great to be back, getting everybody back on the show. But let's get back to normal with the world according to Jax. Come to this side, bud. All right. Jax, how you doing?
Good.
Good. So we're talking about She-Hulk, episode 8. And we're talking about Werewolf by Night. Werewolf by Night did come out on Friday, so full spoilers for those of you that have not seen it. Jax, you have seen Werewolf by Night. What'd you think?
I thought it was good. It's probably the most bloody Marvel thing I've ever seen, though.
Definitely the most bloody Marvel thing. Yeah, that's true. Is it the scariest Marvel thing?
Yeah, Marvel doesn't really... I haven't really seen any scary Marvel thing.
Have you ever seen anything scarier than that?
Yeah.
What's scarier than Werewolf by Night?
I didn't like New Mutants.
Yeah, New Mutants. Whoa. That was a bad decision. Mid, like, height of the pandemic, we went to a drive-thru and saw New Mutants. I was scared by how bad it was. He was just scared by everything else. Well, Jax, Werewolf by Night, will you watch it again?
Yeah.
Who was your favorite character?
Ted.
Yeah, certainly Ted. Ted is the show stealer. And then She-Hulk. Who showed up in She-Hulk?
Daredevil.
The correct answer is Leapfrog. I'm sorry. So Daredevil, what did you think of him?
I thought it was a really cool part of the show.
Is this the first time you've ever seen Daredevil in anything?
Yeah.
Yeah, you saw Matt Murdock in Spider-Man No Way Home, right?
Yeah.
But that was it. What did you think of Daredevil?
I liked watching him. I liked watching him fight and all that stuff. I liked all the funny parts that he had.
What do you think happens in the finale? Does Hulk come back?
Hopefully.
I want
more Hulk. First episode, I think.
Yeah, he was only in the first episode. So Hulk will probably come back. Do we see the Abomination again?
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks, buddy.
Welcome, Dad.
All right. That is the world according to Jax. We watched Werewolf by Night when it was completely light outside, just in case, because he can get a little scared of stuff like that. So... let's start in the obvious area. Rob, there is nobody that loves the horror season as much as you, followed closely by the man below you on the screen. Halloween Horror Nights is something you guys desperately love. Rob, Werewolf by Night is now an official MCU scary thing. What did you make of Werewolf by Night?
I loved it. It had the classic horror vibes, even though it was technically present day, which I enjoyed. I love the choice to shoot it in black and white so they can get away with some of the more gory things. That's why they're able to do that. I thought I love it. That would fits into the whole universe, but I love it condensed as to what it was start to finish too.
So have they said the time frame that it took place? Like
I'm going by the years on the tombstones.
Oh, that's fair. Okay, I guess I didn't pay enough attention to that. I'm out of practice, man.
Yeah, see, that surprised me, actually. I was watching, I'm curious to see what the dates are. And there was one date, I think, I don't remember exactly. It was like one date that three people died on. So there must have been an event or something happened on that day. So I thought all of that was really interesting.
You talk about it being in black and white. The directorial debut of Michael Giacchino, who is... the composer for many, many things, including the Marvel Studios fanfare that we get at the start of everything Marvel, with the exception of sometimes here and there with other things, especially in Ms. Marvel. They played with it quite a bit. absolutely fantastic debut, in my opinion. Marky Mark, you were stoked for Michael Giacchino. The man himself pronounces it Giacchino, so that's what we're going to go with. What did you make of his directorial debut, Marky Mark?
He is one of my favorite film composers, and was I the only one who didn't know that he was directing it until I think I learned that like 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I learned it in the same time. I think that's what when we found out. Yeah,
and I thought for a first time director, he did a great job. Right away, I said I want him to direct the next Hellboy. I love that he directed it. And he also did the score for it while also doing the score for Thor, Love, and Thunder. So the fact that he juggled all that, I was for it. I loved it.
Yeah, he's busy. We did talk about this special for a couple of months before it was official, but Deadline had reported on Gael García Bernal having been cast and that Giacchino was doing the directing and stuff like that. But it was never official until D23, which is probably when you guys find out that he was directing it. I didn't say Mark Valentine from Diz Life Podcast and Shipping Company is going to be joining us at some point tonight. He's working out some internet things as well. So when Mark gets in here, he liked Werewolf by Night, but he's more excited to talk about She-Hulk. So as long as he's here by then, I think he'll be happier. Mike, how about you? You said before we came on air, you weren't 100% in on Werewolf by Night all the way through.
It was fun, but I found it was literally at about the halfway point in the show where I sat there and I went, why do I even care, you know, other than the fact that I came in the door with a couple of these folks? I haven't really been given a reason to kind of plug into anybody, right? It wasn't even like kind of like a Knives Out thing where you start to develop relationships with the characters and you start to at least follow the detective as he begins to figure things out. And so I was going, why am I pulling for any of these people in here? And then we met Ted the Man Thing and understood that it was a rescue mission, and then I said, okay, I'm in. But before that, I was just kind of sitting there going, I don't know what's up. So I enjoyed it. I you know, it's interesting. I love how you asked Jax if this was, you know, the scariest or bloodiest thing in the MCU. And I honestly thought that Doctor Strange, you know, Multiverse of Madness was far more grotesque and bloody with, you know, what Wanda did to the Illuminati. I found this to be rather tame. I thought there was maybe one or two good jump scares. And so for me, like, it felt like a nice, fun pastiche for an old school horror movie. And I like that it was just kind of a neat little one-off. But by this, so I found it entertaining. I didn't think it was a waste of time. I thought it was interestingly done. I thought that the performances were all really strong. But at the end of the day, I kind of was like, okay, cool, moving on.
We blocked the existence of Multiverse of Madness from my entire household. Like, we just don't mention that movie. So that's probably why he didn't think of it either. I hate that movie. Oh, I hate that movie.
It makes me so sad. I love all this horror stuff so much that they're introducing it.
Oh, that movie's awful. This is not about that though. Mike, no. You said something that I kind of want to go off of there. What do you make of the Marvel Studios special presentation aspect of the whole thing, kind of being a one and done 50 minutes, get in, get out, get on with your life? Did you like that? Do you wish there was more coming?
I think it's fun. I mean, honestly, I think that's what a lot of us probably thought What If was going to be until we realized that What If was actually being spun into canon with all of the things that are happening during the multiverse saga. So I don't have a problem with taking things and doing them as little special one-offs like this. I think they're fun. And I like that it's actually real. Like, I didn't realize that there was actually a property, you know, like Werewolf by Night. So if we get a Saturday afternoon, you know, if we get a weekday afternoon special about Squirrel Girl, like, I'm groovy with that. Like, if they want to take some of these really obscure characters and do these cute, fun little one-offs and not have them be like a big impact on the overall MCU, that can be really fun. I just want to have a little bit more substance out of it. I feel like this was just a really nice Halloween piece of Halloween candy, but it was not, you know, it was more like a little sweet tart that you kind of eat rather than like, it wasn't like when you get like the full size Snickers bar from the good neighbor down the block.
Fun size Halloween. That's fair.
Speak, it was fun size. Yeah.
Speak blasphemies against Multiverse of Madness and Ryan will come out of the woodwork. our next, we assume, is going to come out under the entire, umbrella of the Marvel Studios special presentation will be the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special. And then who knows what the next one we get there. Mark, do you like these special presentation things as well? I know you came into Werewolf by Night under the assumption it was something longer than 50 minutes.
I don't know why I thought it was going to be a short show, but then I thought about it going, wait a minute, it's too late for them to start a show that's a horror show. So I don't know. I thought maybe it would be almost a feature. But I also think it was, I just liked it so much. I wanted more, but the feature presentation in the beginning, I liked it. It reminded me of like Grindhouse, kind of like old school. Yeah, yeah. It even had the cigarette burn marks and all that jazz. And then when it kind of went into the black and white Marvel intro, I was like, oh man, we kind of went from that. Oh, wow, there's like claw marks and screams. Okay.
This is not the vision.
We're back into it. Okay, we're good. So I liked it. I hope they do more stuff like this. I don't think everything needs a show. I don't think everything needs to be a big puzzle piece into the bigger picture. So something like this, if they want to just do a little side adventure, I'm okay. I'm okay with that.
Not everything needs to be a show. Alex talked about this when he guest hosted for me last week. Armor Wars going from a series to a movie. I mean, they're starting to try and figure out where those kinds of things fit in. Rob, before we start talking about Werewolf by Night and the content in it, are you in on this idea of the one-offs as well?
Yes, but I also don't think it's made to be watched as it's going to be part of the bigger picture. It's not just a little nugget. These characters are going to come into play. You're going to hear, we might not even say it again this episode, maybe we will. You're going to hear things like the Midnight Suns over the next 5 to 10 years. Like
you're going to hear it from me tonight, that's for sure.
There you go. You don't need 9 episodes. Give me the movie. I think you're going to find that Guardians Holiday Special is going to be some type of canon too. Like all this stuff is going to have something to do with the future of the MCU.
Just a reminder, my receipt with the help of Kevin and Ryan, Mark Hamill is Santa Claus in the MCU. Oh, that is coming in the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special. That is my receipt. That. So I hope it happens. Well, let's get into talking about it all together. So we go through a little bit of exposition. I honestly would have loved the narrator to have stuck around for a little bit more of the entire thing. I thought he had a fun kind of feel to the entire thing. Jalen says that the fight scene in the room where the door was closing was so cool. Favorite part of the show. We will absolutely talk about that. But we learn about Ulysses Bloodstone, and Ulysses welcomes everybody in by animating his corpse looking like Zoltar from Big, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The fact that the Bloodstone was red and we got the red lens flares, stuff like that, really called attention to it. I thought it was brilliantly shot. I really thought it was a lot of fun. But Mike, what did you make of this creepy corpse with, and it made me laugh, the back of his casket also had a this end up with an arrow pointing up.
Oh, that cracked me up. That was hilarious. The only thing I agree with you. I would have liked to have had more of the voiceover. I think the only thing with the voiceover that was disappointing for me is that when I looked it up afterwards, it wasn't the Watcher. I actually thought that I was like, oh, that's really clever. They're going to connect the whole universe by just saying that anytime we do these one-offs, that we're going to bring in the same performer and we're going to get the Watcher, and it'll just be like, that's always the omniscient voice. Like, that's always our Rod Serling for anything and everywhere we go in the MCU. Doesn't really matter, but I thought it was a cute Easter egg until the Easter egg cracked. I enjoyed the kitschiness of it. The characters were bizarre. I wish we'd gotten to know each of them a little bit better, like I said a little while ago. I didn't understand the story with Ziggy Stardust. Like, what was her deal? Like,
I went Marilyn Manson. Ziggy Stardust is actually better.
No, I the second I saw her, I was like, it's Bowie. Like, yeah. I really thought that's what that was. Was the one hunter meant to be Wakandan? Like, or was he just a hunter from somewhere else? But I thought that would have been a cool tie-in. Like, we just didn't know enough about them other than this guy's got a brogue. This one looks like, you know, she's coming out of Ghostbusters, and these other two have some cool weapons and are playing kind of the classic, you know, Asian and African American trope action stars. The only ones we really got close to then were you know, our protagonists. I loved that said, I loved Harriet Harris as the widow.
Verusa.
She was hilarious. I thought the butler was hilarious. I enjoyed the whole setup with him turning the crank to get everything to move forward. And like the pageantry of it was a really fun setup. I just wish we had gotten to know each of the hunters and their stories a little bit more.
Mark, I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit. Do you know why the werewolf always has face paint on when they're in man form? What is the reasoning for that? Does anybody know that?
Well, you said it represents his culture.
Well, yeah, but even in like old Hollywood, like the werewolf was always marked with face paint. I don't know what the, because he said that well, that's what it was. But these guys are really bad monster hunters if they couldn't figure that out. But
I just rewatched like the day before the Wolfman, and then even the original and the remake, and I don't remember face paint on them. Okay. Like, do you have examples of which ones?
My actually, Jax was telling me that in Percy Jackson something. I don't know. Just face paint on the werewolf is kind of a normal thing. And I did a little bit of a Google search to see that that has been the case. It's at times where the werewolf is marked by face paint, but not in Harry Potter. So therefore, that's my entire werewolf. But we go into the maze. We see the bloodstone. They say it's going to be attached to the monster. We don't know what the monster is, but it was going to weaken it, but also piss it off. Which makes it even more. We go into the maze to hunt for the Goblet of Fire, my second Harry Potter reference in the last little bit. Mm-hmm. Rob, what did you make of just the flaming tuba? Just everything ceremonial here.
That was my favorite tuba scene in anything ever. I only want to see flaming tubas now. Way to make that instrument so cool. I love the pageantry of it. I love that whole thing. Like, you knew you were getting set up for a hunt. It's almost, you know, like a perfect game type of thing. Most dangerous game, you know, like one of those types of things. I love that. And I love that this has been a ritual for obviously centuries. Like I took these hunters as these are like the top hunters from each of the corners of their world. That's why I think you had so many different characters representing different things. And I think that answers enough of it, but that's how I felt about it.
Brian, I will say the band nerd in me wants to let everyone know it's a sousaphone, not a tuba.
My mistake.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm just imagining that guy being like, this one time at band camp, we like totally made the sousaphone blow fire.
I will own that. Should we have a battle off between the flaming sousaphone versus the flaming guitar from Mad Max? Can we have a battle between them?
I mean, I would assume the guitar would win.
You think? Yeah. That'd be pretty cool. But I loved that visually. That was beautiful.
Range of motion, if nothing else, the guitar wins.
Yeah.
But we learn all about Elsa. Verusa wants Elsa out of the picture. It was interesting how they were like, how come she gets the fight? We all earned our spot here. How come she gets the fight? And the stepmom is like, no, like she gets to be here. But I think she just kind of wanted her to die more than anything else.
Yep.
But
Brian,
can we talk
about that parallel quick between that and Men in Black when she dragged the chair across the room? I love that. She, the most worthy one, there wasn't a seat for her. She dragged the chair. That was great. Great callback to that movie.
I didn't think about that. That's funny. I didn't think about that being a Men in Black thing at all. That's really funny. Sorry, I was reading my phone. Mark is trying to get in here in a little bit. Absolutely. That's a great call out. Elsa seems like a very capable teammate in the Hunger Games, but she's not as capable of a teammate as Dr. Ted Salas. Mike, what did you make of Man-Thing? You said this is where the entire special turned around for you.
Yeah, he's just totally sympathetic. You know, he immediately pops through and you can't really tell in the first shot, you know, is he Swamp Thing? Is he an elephant? You know, he's got these big relatable eyes, you know, and then it's just one of the, it's kind of like Groot, you know, or, you know, you end up getting these big kind of silentish characters who ultimately want to be liked, but they're the, you know, they're the misunderstood monster. I thought, and again, the fact that Man-Thing is a real character in the Marvel universe, I thought it was great that this is not just something they made up. This is actually going back into the source material. I found him very sympathetic. I loved the dialogue and the scenes going back and forth. I love that his name is Ted. Like, there's just something so hilarious to it. and the fact that Ted always seems to get into trouble and has to get bailed out.
The way they explain, I'm not doing this again. Like, this is the last time. I'm not doing it again.
Yeah, well, and then not to get too far ahead, but then at the end where it's like, okay, fine, you saved me. Let's get sushi. I don't care where. Like, it just, I got a real shawarma type of feeling from that.
Yeah, that's a good call out. So Dr. Ted Salas became Man-Thing because he was basically, just like everybody else in the MCU, trying to replicate the Super Soldier Serum. And it's an SO2 serum. That's about all I know about Dr. Ted Salas, other than the fact that he was married to Ellen Brandt, who we have seen in the MCU, and she was the short-haired, red-headed woman that was on Extremis in Iron Man 3 that goes after Tony Stark. So that was Dr. Ted Salas's wife, at least in the comic books, whether that's the case in the MCU or not. But Man-Thing, what's most interesting is he is actually the guardian of the Nexus of Realities, and which is a cross-dimensional gateway which provides a pathway to any and all possible realities. That's what he does in the comic books. Does that mean that's what he's doing here? I don't know. Rob, where do you think we will see Man-Thing next? Because all I care is that we see Man-Thing again soon.
So we're definitely seeing him again. Where we're going to see him next is such a, oh my God, what a loaded question. Because he is definitely going to have something to do with protecting these realities and the entrance to the multiverse. I will even go as far to say as he may have been taken and kidnapped or caught by these people, which is why the multiverse was able to open, because it doesn't have a guardian right now. That could be part of this. So where are we going to see him next? I don't know. Loki season 2, maybe one of those types of things. I don't know.
That'd be interesting. I have a theory. And when you Wikipedia Man-Thing, the very first sentence is Dr. Hank Pym has expressed the view that Man-Thing is sentient, though difficult to communicate with, in the pages of the Thunderbolts.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
So if Man-Thing shows up in the Thunderbolts, I wouldn't hate it. That it fits a lot more into the Thunderbolts comic book run than it would be in what they're, I assume they're setting up in the movies. But if he showed up in the Thunderbolts, I wouldn't hate that. Just watching Alexei Shostakov have a conversation with that would be really funny.
Well, go ahead, Rob.
I was going to say, my only thing with the Thunderbolts is they seem to have taken out, they've made them more street level.
Yeah.
Like they don't have Abomination, so they seem to be taking the mystical out of it. So that's the only reason I'm not sure, but who knows what's going to happen by then.
I think they have the Abomination. I just think they didn't want to spoil the end of She-Hulk.
Possibly.
Yeah. Well, but with you saying Hank Pym, and if you're talking about multi-dimensional travel, we also could see him in Quantumania.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Man-Thing portrayed by Cary Jones. Cary Jones also portrayed Black Kersantan in the Book of Boba Fett. So this guy is climbing the ranks of Peter Mayhew in my brain, just the way he's being portrayed on film, many, many things. Mark, what did you make of Man-Thing?
Loved Man-Thing. Everyone who kept asking when Swamp Thing was going to show up, I was like, oh my God, that's DC. Please stop it. So my little nerd heart cried a little. I do love Man-Thing. I think it's a great character. If we don't get more of it, it'll be a shame. But I think Kevin Feige loves Man-Thing too much, and these characters, we've got to see him again. I don't think it'll be in Loki, but who knows?
Mark Valentine is here. Mark, you are outside.
Is he?
It's like reporter on the scene.
Coming to you live on location.
Mark Valentine by night.
Mark, are you outside of Man-Thing's house?
coming to you live from the hunt, gentlemen. We're here in the woods. We heard something was lurking and creeping, so we've grabbed the bloodstone, and here we are on location, trying to find Werewolf by Night. We have a complete and total malfunction of our There's a complete and total malfunction of the modem in our house. That like there's a guy working right now to try to restore internet. So I am working off of a very janky connection in my driveway, which is the only place that I could even get Wi-Fi to come and be a part of this discussion. So
he's Mark, doing all of us doing during the hurricane last week.
Mark, give him a shout out. Give him a shout out. See if he gives you a discount if you give him a shout out.
I don't know if I'm liking.
You are.
But you definitely are.
We saw your cute shirt. Oh, no, we lost him.
We lost him altogether. We'll pull Mark down until I see him moving again, and we'll pull him back in. But we find out that the Bloodstone has... So Elsa Bloodstone sure seems to have some sort of Wolverine regenerative power anyway, because that Viking dude bashed her face in, and then she was cool like 3 minutes later. But the Bloodstone does give her those abilities. So we'll see what happens with the Bloodstone next. I mean... The fact that Blade didn't show up actually really surprised me. I would have thought Blade would have made an appearance. We didn't really get any vampires that we know of other than some of the things that were on the wall. Mm-hmm.
They're not going to waste Dracula. They're not going to waste Dracula as just the head on the wall, because Dracula is a Marvel character, and we're definitely going to see him show up over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
The only werewolf we've gotten was in the Abomination self-help group.
Yes.
Or
that's vampire. That's our vampire. That's our vampire.
Yeah, that's fair. So we find out the Bloodstone, what it can do. It can transform Jack in 5 seconds. Jack seems to be a genuinely nice person. He's got these figured out why do I keep going back to it? Very Remus Lupin kind of style where he's trying to be, don't roll your eyes at me. You're the Harry Potter guy. I'm trying to make you feel welcome. When he starts sniffing her, it's like, man, this is kind of odd, but you're hoping it works and you expect that it will. But Mark, I'm going to go to you on this. You and I talked about this. He didn't look as wolfy werewolf as we expected, but then we looked at Werewolf by Night in the comics and he looked a lot like Weasel from the Suicide Squad.
Yeah. I was surprised. It, of course, I like just also recently afterwards watched American Werewolf in London, and there's the morph scene when he's going from Jack to the werewolf where you see him like almost look exactly like Werewolf by Night. At first I was like, oh, we didn't get, this could have been so much like scarier, but I'm okay with it. I was good with it. But I looked more Wolfman than werewolf. Yes. I'm oh God, no, don't put Teen Wolf in my head. No. But yes, they still made him look pretty scary, but I was a little surprised by how little. But as we pointed out, the comic book, if they would have adapted that, I just pictured Weasel from the Suicide Squad. So
don't say the Suicide Squad like it's not the better of the two Suicide Squad films.
Well, if I say Suicide Squad, you're gonna be like, it's the Suicide Squad. So wanted to make sure I enunciated.
You know me too well. Rob, what did you make of this camera work where we were zooming in on Elsa while that werewolf transformation was happening and you could see the shadows in the background? Absolutely gorgeous.
So let me tell you something. I found out there was no CGI in that. They were flashing it and they must have been like changing characters. Like one was a little closer to the light so it would look bigger and larger. What a cool freaking transformation, man. I'm so okay with that was the way they did it, and that is how he came out. I can't think of a better way to show that. And again, given when that black and white old school feel, Mark, I too watched the 1941 Wolfman just last week, so I was all on board with that.
Mike, how about you?
I thought it was great. I mean, to the point about the CGI, though, I think that anything they did in order to make Man-Thing work is 100 times better than any of the CGI that's been on She-Hulk. And I love me some She-Hulk, but Man-Thing looks way more real than She-Hulk. And certainly we'll talk about this later, way more real than the flippy floppies that my boy Daredevil was doing. So I liked the less is more approach with this that felt like old school monster movies where they didn't have all the special effects and they didn't have the budget. And so they needed to be clever about what are you going to show to have that type of effect? And so I actually really appreciated the shadow fighting and the way that the whole battle happens in the hallway between the werewolf and the guards. I liked the transformation. I liked that you were supposed to become afraid based on the fear that you saw in another character's eyes rather than having to be grossed out by some sort of effect. It's that whole thing where everybody thinks that Scarface is this bloody, awful, disgusting movie, you know, because of like the chainsaw scene, but you never actually see the actual chainsaw action. It's all implied. That type of implied horror I always find to be really effective. So I thought that was fun.
Upon second rewatch, knowing when he escapes that cage, that he was going to jump down on the guards, you could finally see him hiding up on top of one of those mounted heads, and the way his eyes glow, the way they kind of hold that. They don't give you a good look at him until you get that. After that, you've seen glimpses of the werewolf until you get that full-blown look. And if it, I don't know how much CGI, Rob, do you know how much CGI the werewolf was in general?
No, you know, I didn't look it up, but I'm actually assuming not much, especially with the black and white.
Yeah. I mean, he did look more like a man than I would have expected, all the more reason leading to probably not as much CGI as some other stuff. But Mike, you talked about it. Mark, I'm going to go to you on this, that hallway scene where we get a big old splash of blood on the camera and it stays there and it just drips down and it's a single one shot all the way through. I thought that was my favorite scene of the entire thing.
That scene was great. It reminded me of the kind of like the hallway scenes of the Daredevil Netflix show. You just had the long shot, all the battle happening, him jumping off, the guys in the background like trying to get their life together while werewolf is eating their friends. The closing door to drive up the tension of, oh, here's the closing door. And just the black and white, I think, made it scarier. The blood on the camera made it feel old school, like 60s, 70s horror movie. That's what I think I liked about this presentation the most, was it didn't feel like anything else that Marvel was doing right now. When you watch Doctor Strange, when you watch Thor, Love and Thunder, even She-Hulk, you're like, I kind of like feel I've seen some of this before, but this felt fresh. It felt very different, and I liked it for that reason. The hallway scene showed a different style of filmmaking for Marvel, and I loved it. Yeah.
To your point earlier, Mike, I think Multiverse of Madness kind of did rip off the Band-Aid a little bit from expecting what you would see. There was nothing as violent in this as watching Black Bolt's head explode in Multiverse of Madness, which is still very jarring every time like I see
it. How is it jarring? He literally told her how to do it.
Well, I know.
I'm sorry. That movie.
I think we often overlook how she squishes Reed Richards' head like a little grape. That one is even more disturbing to me. Out of all the people who died there, grape.
Yeah.
But you didn't think Marvel would go there, and then Elsa slits the one dude's throat. You see that, and then the sword ends up in Ziggy Stardust's head. Like, and they show all that. Like,
it started with, you know, like the Yui Claw, you know, dismemberment. You know, the very first gore is when the Asian warrior loses his hand. I actually thought it was very clever how she actually picked up and used his hand in order to fire the crossbow weapon. I thought that was very clever. I agree with you guys that like the way that the whole scene was staged there was fun, and I liked that every once in a while they'd get a jab in with their like electro sticks. My only question for you guys is, the thing that took me out of it is, how does the werewolf know kung fu? Like, I wanted the werewolf to just throw these people around, claw them down, you know, Hulk style. And yet he had these moves where he would like block something and then like pull out like a sweep. Like, it just looked too choreographed. And so I was hoping that he was just going to tear through people. And just felt like there was more man than wolf in that wolfman equation for me.
Mike, after seeing two cats here at the house, how they fight each other without any training, I feel like there's a natural animal instinct on how to fight with swinging leg kicks and jumping. It just comes natural.
Are you sure your cats have not been properly trained in the mystic arts?
I mean, who knows? Wong?
We don't see Mark for long periods of time. We don't know what he's doing in there. So.
No. I'm watching The Sopranos with...
With Madison. I mean, if a rat Madison can teach four eye. Turtles kung fu, if a rat can teach four turtles karate, you never know.
I would say I try not to look that deep into the werewolf being able to fight. we could go down that rabbit hole, but I think the part that stuck out at me, all of these monster hunters don't go after the monster. They go after her, Elsa, while the poor defenseless red shirt guys from Star Trek are fighting the monster instead. I was like, man, that was a miscalculation on their part.
And I wonder Speaking if she has a reputation that precedes her. Like, I wonder if, like, she's got a reputation that other than being Ulysses' daughter, then she lost that birthright.
They didn't know her, though, I thought.
They said she didn't belong there. They didn't necessarily say they didn't know her. I think they were scared of her. I think they were scared of her.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, but speaking of Star Trek red shirts, you guys know that the wonderful Easter egg that the Scottish warrior is the punk who gets the Vulcan neck pinch for playing his music too loud on the bus in Star Trek 4.
I just saw that. I loved that.
He's the street punk from Star Trek 4, and I'm like, that is the type of crossover that
Mike,
I can get.
Mike, can you for Brian, who's a Star Wars fan, let him know which Star Trek that is?
Star Trek 4.
It's the one with the whales. It's the one with the whales.
Where the crew of the Enterprise go back in time into the late 80s in order to save a couple of humpback whales.
Riveting.
It's a great movie. It's a fun movie. And while they're there, Kirk and Spock end up on a San Francisco city bus with a punk who is just being rude to everyone and playing his boombox too loud. And Spock gives him the nerve pinch. And
Brian, it's the Force Awakens of Star Trek movies.
For the record, you watch your mouth. For the record, Mike is a bigger Star Wars fan than I am. He knows more than I do. And he's a giant Star Trek fan. So listen to Mike on Babu's Freaking Podcast. You can learn all about his Star Wars knowledge. But he knows a lot about Star Trek, too. So, Rob, let's finish up with Werewolf by Night. We'll move on to She-Hulk. What do you expect from this to be leading into anything else? Again, we talked about Midnight Suns earlier. We now have Moon Knight. We could get Man-Thing, Werewolf by Night. There's a couple of many parts of Midnight Suns that can come into play. What do you expect? Is there anything you want?
On a small term, I'm expecting this to have its own side stories, like I say, where they are going to fight other monsters. I think that's going to come. On a bigger level, you may see Elsa show up with this Deadpool thing. She has been in Deadpool comics before, and she was also on Battleworld, which we are definitely getting to. Battleworld's going to be a thing, so I'm curious where these characters are going to play that role. So that's what I'm waiting for.
Do you think that Ted Salas, a.k.a. Man-Thing, is actually guarding the Nexus of Realities?
I can't see how he's not with all the multiverse stuff coming up. You're not just randomly throwing him in now for no reason.
Fair enough. Marky Mark, any last minute thoughts on Werewolf by Night?
I hope we get another one next October.
I'm with you there. And if Michael Giacchino is going to do it again, heck of a directorial debut. Mike,
how about you? Do the next Hellboy.
I have no expectations whatsoever. I'm gonna hope we see the Man Thing again, because I thoroughly enjoy him in all of his tentacle glory.
Of the four people that made it out alive, the only one I don't expect to see again is the butler. Laura Donnelly as Elsa Bloodstone, and then Ted Salas, and then Gail Garcia Bernal as Jack Russell. I do expect to see all them again in the very near future. Let's transition to She-Hulk. Marky Mark, you had said many times on United We Fan, Earth's Mightiest Weirdos, other places that She-Hulk was your most anticipated show of this year, at least coming out from Marvel. Has She-Hulk met your expectations?
It has met my expectations. It's not perfect. There's some growing pains and technology growing pains. Miss Marvel is still my favorite of the shows that we've gotten recently. I can say that easily. But I do enjoy a lot of parts of She-Hulk. This episode was really, really good. I need Marvel to stop ruining stuff. They used to keep secrets, and we knew about Daredevil for a while. Could you just imagine the reaction of him walking into the courtroom like, oh, like another Spider-Man, like jaw drop moment. But I enjoy the show a lot. I think it's going to grow on people over time, but yeah.
I feel like them having to put Daredevil at least in the trailer was to get away to people to
watch. It was a desperation move, I feel like.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. It would have been cool to see Matt Murdock. It, though, we knew she was a lawyer. We expected this kind of all along. And then especially when he's even Spider-Man. Like, it was the thing that made the most sense anyway. Mike, you're in on She-Hulk a lot more than I thought you would have been ahead of time.
I'm way in more than I thought I would have been too. I've been pleasantly surprised that I think it's a far better series than I expected. I found myself enjoying the first episode quite a lot. Love me some Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk. The longer this has gone on, the more that I've really enjoyed embracing it as something truly unique in the MCU. It is a true sitcom. These are nicely contained episodes. There is a through line in everything, but these are individual episodes. You can pick out each episode as Jen has this adventure. Jen has that. So Jen becomes a Hulk. Jen gets sued for copyright infringements. Jen goes to a commune. Jen, you know, flirts with Daredevil. Like, I enjoy that there's something uniquely episodic to each of these, and there's even B plots, like when her colleagues take on cases on the side. Like, it's a real sitcom, and it's straight out of the comic that she has that fourth wall direct address, you know, really nice kind of Fleabag type of thing where she gets to talk out. I enjoy the meta-ness of it, you know, from them taking pot shots at how it's not the same actor playing the Hulk to her being able to say, you know, didn't you last time on She-Hulk this guy? Like, all of it to me is a perfect blend of being just self-aware enough without being too self-aware and being unique enough with the format that it just owns. It's like, we're going to be a fun sitcom and we're going to roll with it.
Before we get to Rob, you talked about there being through lines. I will say most of the through lines are working for me, but the character of Titania just didn't ever quite land with me. And I don't know if it was Jameela Jamil's portrayal. I don't know if how she was written. They never really explained her very well. But when you're talking about the B plots, I will take Mr. Immortal facing all of his ex-wives and ex-husbands. You could give me a whole show about those guys. That cracked me up. But did Titania work for you, Mike? Because that was the one they put the most investment in.
Well, Titania, I mean, she's She-Hulk's biggest adversary in the comics.
Right.
But I feel like they couldn't set her up as a big bad because they were going to have to roll with somebody else. I think, unfortunately, she just kind of gets short shrift there. What I do think they do really, really well here is... And where I think that this show, I think we're all going to look back and realize that this show is actually a much more pivotal show than it feels like right now because the storylines are fluffy, is this is the show where superheroes become normalized. So until now, it's always been there are a select few superheroes. They are the tippity top, you know, because even the Defenders, you know, from the Netflix series, like they've been really under the radar. And now we're starting to get parallels to like what we see in The Boys or what you ultimately get in the MCU, you know, later when everybody starts coming out, is that there is mass adoption of superhero culture and there's mass adoption of celebrity superhero culture. And there are tiers of superheroes and they have to have legal representation. And some have public identities, some have private identities. There's ultimately to the point where you're going to end up then when the X-Men finally appear, you're going to have the true societal backlash and societal conflict of mutants and super and enhanced beings as others. So it's really great how they've gone from it's a select few who are kind of deified to now we're introducing it where it goes out on a broad scale and there's something kind of quirky and interesting about them to the point where by the time we start getting introduced to the X-Men, hopefully sooner rather than later, they're going to become a political football that ultimately then spurs on the fear and separates everything into a war. So I think it's such a, I'll stop talking in a second. It's such a subtle, beautiful, comfortable transition that it's like the frog in the boiling pot of water. Like you don't know it's happened until you're already boiling.
You could say the leapfrog in the boiling pot of water. Rob, how about you?
Yeah. Mike, you talk as much as you want. That was all fantastic stuff.
That was really good.
And I loved all that. She-Hulk's so much fun. It's like Boston Legal meets The Flash from a TV show standpoint. You know what I mean? It's like you have these court cases. I love how it's coming together. I'm willing to forgive the CGI for now because it's. I think they're just trying to do too much. Kevin Feige's where they spread himself thin. It's a lot of projects. But I love the different things. The one thing I'm going to say, because we got four, you know, we're four dudes here talking about it. A lot of those characters, though, are for the women, for the females, to bring them in. There's a lot of issues there, and I think that's a big thing with Titania. I kind of like that they wrote her like that. It's this, you know, buy all these products to be beautiful, to be first, to be whatever. It's I'm of a Jameela Jamil fan. I've seen her on the Impractical Joker stuff. So she loves to make fun of that side of life, to send a message. So I kind of think that was the main point of that character. But as far as the show, the crossover from the comics, the way they are bringing those fourth wall breaks to life, I don't see how they could do it better. I think they're really doing the character and the comic justice in this series.
Yeah, it does feel like, and it's not her fault, but it does feel like they almost wrote the character to literally pull Tahani from The Good Place and then make her a superpowered human being. Like, she does have a lot of some of those same tendencies. And I don't think that she's necessarily being typecast. I think that was an intentional choice, because I think she does have a lot of similarities. Mike, you talked about that world we're headed into, and there was a massive line within this show that is going to lead toward more of that in the court case of Edna Mode versus Syndrome, basically. But we got Ribbit and Rip It, I thought is a funny name of the episode and a funny line. Rob. Man, I'm having a hard time. Rob, what did you make of Leapfrog as a character? I mean, he's just a doofus.
This was never a serious character in the comics. You may see him even do some good, like she kind of helped them out at the end. But I think it served the purpose well, because they want to bring in the lawyer side. And I like that they're doing it. And the biggest thing I think from this to take away is what Daredevil said. The things that she can help in the courtroom, and there's things that she can't, and that's where She-Hulk steps in. So I think Leapfrog was a really nice character to kind of bring that to light.
And she was not getting what he was laying down. She was really surprised to see Matt Murdock as Daredevil. Mark, how about you? Did you like Leapfrog? Was he a little bit too silly for you?
The Marvel version of Bruce Wayne was a funny guy trying to... I thought it was funny. I didn't realize he appeared in like the previous episode walking out of the clothing store. I know I saw that somewhere. Yes. I was like, oh, I got, and then I went back and watched. And I was like, oh, yep, that's him. So I thought it was funny that he had the name of his secret lair on top of the building. That was great. When we see his secret lair, all I could think about was Batman and Robin, how like Dr. Freeze, Jesus. Mr. Freeze's lair, the bright colors, the setting, and then Poison Ivy. That's all I could think about, was just how ridiculous it was.
Joel Schumacher was very happy.
Oh. So, yeah, I thought he was funny. I thought it was a great throwaway side character. And, yeah.
And he was – and, Mike, I'm gonna throw it to you. Talking about what you just talked about, there was a massive line that Matt dropped in the courtroom, said – need I remind you, the Sokovia Accords have been repealed, giving heroes their right to anonymity back. So you have guys like Leapfrog, like Syndrome from The Incredibles, that are trying to be superheroes and they have no gifts whatsoever. And then you've got all these other ones, mutants or whatever they may be, trying to protect their anonymity. And Matt builds a very good case around why not getting people out there, but the Sokovia Accords have been repealed, and that's a big deal in this world that we're building that you just talked about.
That's a huge deal, and it's such a threat that it's amazing. Again, it's kind of a line that just gets thrown in and thrown away amid what's supposed to be this comic show on Disney Plus. It's not in an actual film, so yeah, you're right. That's a huge deal. The other thing, talking about leading into the world elsewhere, is there have been Easter eggs throughout this entire show for Wolverine. They're, you know, whenever they're on the internet, you know, aside from getting ads for the Iron Man 3 shoe, there have been little byline stories talking about a man with claws getting into bar fights. So it's they played the X-Men theme and they called out Mutation at the, you know, in the end of Ms. Marvel. They're starting to subtly and not so subtly lay the groundwork for, we are going to live in a world where human beings have either chosen to evolve or they have evolved. And it's going to be a real treacherous landscape.
There was a massive, massive Wolverine Easter egg later in the episode when they're getting ready for the gala and Nikki comes out of the bathroom and she's got makeup brushes in her hands and she has three in between her fingers and she does the claws with her hands. That's clearly a Wolverine call out as well. Exactly. Nice work, Rob. DizLife Mark, welcome back to the show.
Gentlemen, hello. I don't know how long you have me. The internet is cutting in and out, but I'm here for a moment, here for a minute.
Mark, you dropped a bombshell on me the other day that Loki 1, WandaVision 3, because Multiverse of Madness is such a bad film, right there in the number 2 line is She-Hulk.
I'm loving She-Hulk. It's funny. It's irreverent. I love the way that she breaks the fourth wall. It's fun. It's a really fun show. I think that there's so many people who have been so unfair to it on Twitter and over on TikTok. I think you should just enjoy it. I think people are overthinking it, and I think it's really a fun show. It's giving me exactly what I hoped for and then more.
Including Madison with two N's, one Y, but not where you think.
I love Madison.
Well, yeah. I think Mark's onto something here, and it's something that actually Rob said earlier on. It's almost as if the show was so self-aware of what the response was going to be from the trolls that, you know, they've built it right in terms of what society's reaction to She-Hulk is.
And it's built in so much that
these incel trolls that are out to try and ruin her and shame her, the same way as in real life, you got the trolls who are speaking up and talking down about a female hero. It's a strange loop.
And it's so self-aware that some of the internet comments from, I think it was the first or second episode where they talk about there being a female version of the Hulk. They took literal reactions to the show's announcement from D23 in 2019. And those internet comments are the ones that are in the show. They're legit word for word from the real world. So like you said, they're very aware of what they're doing. Similar to what WandaVision did, very aware that people thought Reed Richards was going to show up because simply Monica said she had a guy. Like, they know what they're doing. They know how to drive conversation. And they don't care if you hate it because it's female empowerment or whatever it's doing. They want you to like the product, but they know what that backlash is going to be. Rob, what did you think when Matt Murdock came strutting through? He couldn't find a parking space.
I love that we have a more lighthearted Matt Murdock already than the Netflix series.
Not everybody does, and I want to talk about that here in just a minute.
People don't like change. Let's just be honest. People get used to something. They decide what it's going to be. Take this advice for life. Whatever you do, go into it with an open mind. Because if you go into it and you have an idea and then it's not that idea, you're disappointed. But maybe it's better than your idea. Maybe it's going to grow into something. So I love this version of Matt Murdock. And I like that it's kind of – he's a little mentor to her a little bit. Kind of in the Tony Stark to Peter Parker way. Maybe not in that way. You know what? There you got the wrong thing. But you know what I mean? But they it's a mentor. Listen,
I really hope it's not in the same way, Rob.
But you know what I mean. It's a mentor character. He's been through this. He's the experienced one with this exact situation of being a lawyer and being a superhero. So I love everything about him coming into that courtroom.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. I feel like they're actually walking a pretty fine line with this character. I think the line of "I'm a really good lawyer" from Spider-Man: No Way Home, I don't think anybody really had a problem with, but it shows his kind of softer side. And then in this one, I think just L.A. Matt is different than Hell's Kitchen Matt. Like, I just think he's going to be a little bit different. I don't need Matt Murdock from the Daredevil Netflix series to be what we have in the MCU 100%. But I do think Daredevil Born Again is going to be dark, and I think it's going to be intense. Mike, you're our biggest Daredevil fan here.
Yeah, I mean, he's also in a different place. So it's almost as if the people who love the Netflix series forget how the Netflix series ended, which is that he reconciles with Foggy. He reconciles his relationship and starts to understand how he can be both successfully Daredevil and be Matt and protect his relationships. He's back doing what he loves. he's got his firm again. Like he's in a really good place at the end of season three on Netflix. So this idea that somehow he's still dark and tormented is silly. He defeated Kingpin. He defeated Bullseye. He got his best friend and his lady friend back. And now, you know, to your point, L.A., Matt Murdock is different. He's in L.A. He's living the life. He's getting a brand new suit. He's, you know, he's flirting it up with Jen Walters. Like, how could you not be? He's wearing yellow. Like, how could you not be a little bit different and feel a little bit better? Like, dude can still kick ass in a hallway. Right, like he's
that is for certain.
Like there was no holding back when he threw out his sticks and bashed some dude in the face, and their blood spattered all over the brick wall in the back. That's the daredevil that we know and love, who knows how to fight in a hallway.
Mark Valentine, you've said on multiple occasions you just can't get into Netflix Daredevil. Is this a Daredevil that's going to keep your attention?
It was fun. I mean, what I like about the MCU is it doesn't take itself too seriously. It knows when to press those buttons and hit the emotional stuff. And then it also knows when to just have fun with itself. And I like how lighthearted they've been with Matt. He's a lot of fun. Have we talked about the Walk of Shame yet, gentlemen?
No. Bring it up now. It's hilarious.
The Walk of Shame was probably one of my top 10 moments in the MCU. Like seeing Daredevil do the Walk of Shame, no boots on. Kind of given the person that's walking by, it was like college flashbacks. Like, hey, what's up? It was.
We're learning more about Mark every minute.
Yeah, whoa.
It was really fun. It's really fun and it's great. I think the problem that I have with Daredevil on Netflix is what I have, not with the subject matter as just as much as the presentation of it. The three of us have been on a side note, been talking about Andor.
Oh no. It was going to be so good.
You know, before he comes back, I don't know why we're necessarily assuming this is the same Daredevil.
Probably not going to be. It's going to be a
mythical show. I've heard that it is. I've heard that they're actually that Feige said, you know, that stuff's all legit.
See, I think it'd still be a different universe where there's a lot of parallels, but not that specific thing. Like, I don't know if this is the same guy that fought the Hand with the Defenders. I don't know if that would be. I'm not saying that it's not, but it wouldn't surprise. That's why I assume he's a little lighter. There might be some very subtle changes in his life. So the main hotspots happen. So we still have the same basis of the character. But I don't know if I'm going to necessarily say it was the same universe.
Well, let's keep going, because I know a few of you guys have some hard stops. We're pushing the hour mark right now. Todd is dirty. Todd has a Wakandan spear. Todd is intelligentsia. That spear can pierce nasty green skin, I think.
Yeah.
Are we all in agreement there?
He asked about it before. What about vibranium? He made sure he got something now that's made of vibranium.
It's been a million. He made that very clear. He's the worst.
He may be. Can I say something crazy right now? I might as well say it in case it happens. I think he may be Red Hulk.
I hope not. I don't want to see this guy again.
I don't either, but it wouldn't. There's a small chance of me that thinks that might be a big end of this series.
She did drop a Red Hulk line too going to the gala. Could there be a Red Hulk? Could there be this? Could there be that? I do think Bruce is going to show back up next week. There's apparently a trailer out there that shows Bruce in it, but
yeah, I saw that.
I figured he's long gone now on a spaceship. I figured we sent him away.
We got to close that loop, though, don't we? Unless we go World War Hulk.
They open that loop for that reason.
It'd be interesting. Daredevil takes matters into his own hands. I did love the self-aware line of when he's like, well, you didn't even ask. You didn't ask why I was trying to take him down. And then she's like, well, pardon me for thinking the guy dressed like a devil was the bad guy in this scenario. He's like, all right, fair point. That's fair enough. But Mark, you talked about it. Daredevil in the hallway. They can shoot those scenes just as good as they could on Netflix, at least in my opinion. I thought this hallway scene was really fun.
I, being the, you know, the music score person, when they played this theme there, I jumped up for joy. And then we had the hallway scene, them giving a shout out to the Netflix series. I think that was a great treat. But then with her jumping through the roof, reminding you this is She-Hulk, not Daredevil, I thought that was great. I'm excited to see what they do with it. I agree. I think the series is going to be a little darker. I love that it's going to be the longest series as far as episode count. So I am a big fan of them bringing in the yellow and red suit as well. So I love it. If we can get Kevin Smith to direct an episode or two of Daredevil, I'll be happy for that as well.
It's tied for the longest. WandaVision also 9 episodes.
Until Daredevil.
Yeah, until Daredevil.
That's what you're talking about. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's going to double. It's going to double She-Hulk in WandaVision. It's going to be 18.
Yep.
Yeah. I when Leapfrog just like, is the devil guy a lawyer too? No, I'm just a big fan of legal dramas. I thought that was pretty funny. I thought that was enjoyable. Mike, do you think that this relationship has any carryover effect? Do you think Jen Walters may have any sort of appearance anywhere within Daredevil Born Again? Do you think this is a one-night stand? There seems to be a lot more to this relationship, and I want to see it keep going.
I would love for it to happen. I wouldn't bank on it. It would be really nice. I mean, they date in the comics, so you know, it'd be cool if it somehow held over. I just don't know. I don't know how much that I just really don't know how much that happens, but I sure would like it. I think she's super fun. I love everything about her performance. I love everything about the character. I love the two of the dynamic the two of them have together. And you know, to your point about how bad Leapfrog is, my immediate gut reaction in seeing him try and fight them was that he reminded me of the Judo Master from Peacemaker. Like, totally green, flipping around, and entirely inept.
Peacemaker is so good. I love that. Let's get into the last piece of the episode, and then we'll get you guys out of here. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with us. This has been an absolute blast to get this group back together. She-Hulk is exposed at the end. Josh, Jalen says it the best in the comments. Josh is the worst. That is dirty, man. He sets up that camera and copies her phone. They have everything. The Hulk King, I'm 100% positive that it is the leader. It is the leader that was, what's his name? Blonsky's boss in The Incredible Hulk that got that serum into his brain. Like, it's going to be the leader. He's already been announced as the villain in Captain America New World Order. I think that's where Jen shows up next as well. So I think we're setting up a massive MCU through line here with the leader being that villain in New World Order, whatever's going on there. He's going to be, I would assume, revealed next week. Is he played by the same guy? I would assume, but you could easily recast that with what the leader looks like.
They already announced it will be.
He was at D23.
They said,
cool.
Yeah.
So, he was there. He was there himself. Yeah.
So when they announced that for New World Order, I mean, I do think that for me, that did kind of spoil the end of She-Hulk, because even if he doesn't show up, he could even just be in a post-credit scene. But I do think it's going to reveal the leader at some point, and I do think that it's going to reveal the Abomination headed toward the Thunderbolts. That's where I think we're kind of wrapping up in this show. Or if the Hulk does show up, which again, there's a trailer out there apparently that shows that that's likely to happen this week. Robert, from the very first episode of our review of She-Hulk episode 1, thinks that Hulk was on his way back to Sakaar to pick up Baby Hulk. Scar is his name in the comics.
Yes.
If do they have the guts to pull that off here? Rob, you think we're headed to World War Hulk? Does Hulk's kid show up? Like, there's so many other things that it could do. But Mike, to your point, it is setting up more in the MCU than I think people are giving it credit for. So Marky Mark, I'm going to go to you on just how this episode ended, any last minute thoughts, and where you think we're headed in the finale.
I like that we got to see her lose control. That I thought it was too easy for, like, I felt bad that Mark Ruffalo didn't have any control over the Hulk and Jen just figured it out so quickly. Like, good on her, but I was glad to see her lose control there. I think that was a great story development. Because I mean, that having that embarrassment, her parents were there. That was supposed to be a big achievement, her big night, and to have someone do that, she became very vulnerable after meeting a lot of douchebag guys and having her phone cloned and then shown that. Who wouldn't Hulk out over that? So who knows what's going to happen next? She's got some bad PR, but I think it's going to be a good wrap up. I feel like this always happens with the MCU shows. We get to the end and we're like, oh man, like I wish we had like one or two episodes after we got to this really good part. So there's only one left, right?
One.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how they wrap it up. For me, the MCU has a slight problem with wrapping up their shows. So we'll see how they do this.
I think that's a fair criticism. Rob, how about you?
Whatever is going to happen, she is going to take care of it herself. And that's another reason I think there's going to be no heroes. That is why they use the term fridged in this one, which if I'm going to leave on any note, I think we should talk about that for a second. She said, am I getting fridged? In comic book history, for whoever doesn't know, they will depower or kill off the female so the male character has a chance to succeed by himself and overcome. That's why she said, am I getting fridged? And I forgot what comic it was, but some superheroes, female count, whatever, she was killed and put in a fridge. That's how they came up with the term.
I don't think I caught that line drop at all.
Wasn't it a Green Lantern comic?
It was a Green Lantern comic. Yes, it was. She said, what kind of twist is this? Am I being fridged? Are they bringing a Red Hulk? And you were probably so happy to hear the Red Hulk comment. Everybody missed
that's what fridge. It was. Yeah, this, I didn't realize that's when it was.
This whole show is about female empowerment, and I love the way they did it. So you bet your ass she is going to take down whatever it is by herself. This is about her.
Unless it truly is the leader and she's not going to take him down fully, she'll take down somebody.
I don't think he's coming, Brian. I think you're Mephistoing it again. We're getting ahead of the game. We're so excited. I don't think he's coming, but maybe a post-credit scene, but he's not going to be in the episode.
Fair enough. Mike, how about you?
I think it would be a shame if Hulk came back, like to the point Rob just made, like it's a female empowerment show. Like he's the one who's getting fridged by getting sent off to Sakaar. Like she's got to solve her own problems. Like Matt can't come in and save her. Like she needs to figure all this stuff out. I would love if it was like even a post credit scene where, you know, Banner rolls up and is like, I'm here. I'm going to crush him. I'm going to make this all better. And she's like, I already solved this thing. Like before we even got to the credits, bro, like we're good. But I think there's a lot to pack in. I think she needs to save her reputation. We need to have a reveal on the leader. We need to get to the point where she feels comfortable completing this arc. And like Tony Stark style, you know, I am Iron Man. She's got to own it by the end and be like, I am She-Hulk and I am Jen Walters.
And I am Groot.
She-Hulk smash.
And I am Steve Rogers. Marky Mark, I know you got to get out of here. Anything you need to plug before you get out of here?
Thanks for having me. Miss the weirdos. As you can see, Rob, Mark, and I have the same stylist, the Happiness Collection.
She's your Luke Jacobson.
Yes.
She is.
So, but thank you all. Keep watching and give Miss Marvel another chance. I feel like that one's going under the radar.
Miss Marvel, not here at Weirdos. We love Miss Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Mike, how about you? I know you've got to get out of here as well. Any last minute things to plug, and then we'll go to Mark for any last minute predictions he may have.
We've been on an extended hiatus at Babu's Frickin' Podcast, but we are returning within the next 2 weeks. We're gonna take on Andor because it's an utterly bingeable show that has trouble ending. So we're gonna bucket it into two parts, where we get the first six episodes and the latter six episodes, we'll get two full arcs there. So if you like your Star Wars, check out Andor and then check us out over there. And Brian, thanks for having me back on with the Weirdos. This has been great.
Absolutely been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Mark, peace. Welcome back to the show. Any last minute predictions for the She-Hulk finale? Anything you're expecting to see?
Jen's obviously going to resolve the conflict of, you know, how does she navigate her life as a lawyer and as the She-Hulk. I think she's going to merge the two of them together. And I mean, we have to be setting up the leader, I would assume.
Yep.
But I'm not going to go out there and say I'm 100% sure on that.
I am 100% sure, but Rob just called the Mephisto on me that even though he could be in charge, it doesn't mean he's going to show up.
Yeah. I mean, you very well could get that, but I am this is the first show, I think, because I didn't come into it with expectations or even overlay what I thought the show was going to be. I'm just really enjoying it. It's in my top three of Marvel shows for that reason. I came into it with like a clean slate, and I'm really just loving the heck out of it. So whatever it gives me, I'm going to be really happy with at this point, because this is the cherry on top of, I think, a really cool slate of Marvel TV shows. And of course, man, like, I don't know how much Black Panther you guys talked today or tonight, because I have no internet, but I am like, I'm all in for November 11th. That is circled on my calendar. That's going to be a very big day for me. And I'm probably going to see it three times that weekend.
We talked no Black Panther tonight. We were saving that. So I'm with you. I'm going to go at least twice on opening weekend, probably three times. We will have to have you back on to review that film. We've got a good thing going with film reviews where we get as many weirdos in as we can. So Mark, did you find Werewolf by Night?
I'm sorry, man. Again, my internet is like,
all right. Did you find Werewolf by Night on your excursion earlier tonight?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did right. not, unfortunately.
I hope you found Dr. Ted Salas, a.k.a. Man-Thing. I love him. I need him in my life more. Rob, what's happening at the Diz Nerdy Network?
Oh, my God. There's so much stuff going on. We have a new celebrity guest every Monday and Thursday night. The shows are on at 11 p.m., but they're always there. Most recently, we had Tessa Del Zappo, the medium, which was very nice for October vibes. So yeah, we got shows till the end of the year. So if you like celebrity interviews, they're there.
And Mark, last time you were with us, Diz Life Podcast was its own thing. It is now part of the Chip and Company Podcast Network, which you are the executive producer of. What's happening with Chip & Co?
So Diz Life Podcast has been assumed by Chip & Company. We have fallen into the fold and now are a part of five great days of podcasting. So every Monday, Diz Life Podcast is living our best Disney life on the Chip & Company Podcast Network. Then we have the best of Disney Parks, Parks and Review and Company, and then Parks Extra on the weekend. But we're gearing up. We're going to be pulling in another podcast really, really soon. Those guys are just taking care of some business on their end. But it's fun. It's fun to produce the podcasts. Love working with Chip, obviously. Love working with Greg. Those guys make my job so easy and so fun. Loved going out to D23, hanging out with those guys. And it's life is good, as they say. Life is good. It does not suck, to be sure.
Gentlemen, it has been far, far too long. Thank you both for coming on. Thank you to Marky Mark and to Mike Ruby for coming on. Until next time, we have the She-Hulk finale. I didn't mention it earlier. Do you know why they dropped Werewolf by Night this weekend, Rob?
No. Instead
of waiting for the finale of Ms. Marvel of She-Hulk to happen first?
No, why?
There was a full moon last night.
There was. I didn't even realize that was why. That's awesome.
That's why they dropped it this weekend. I thought that was a cool piece of trivia, nothing else. But like I said, absolute blast, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, for the children.
For the children.
For the children.
Earth's Mightiest Weirdos is brought to you by Pinch of Pixie Dust Travel. People who love travel understand that life isn't about the breaths you take. It's about the moments that take your breath away. That's why we help coordinate the most magical adventures for you and your family. Disney, Universal, Sandals, Norwegian, Carnival, and more, we are a full-service concierge travel agency that will help with every aspect of your journey. Let us take care of the details while you enjoy your family. Get a quote today by calling us at 570-832-7798 or fill out a trip request form at pinchofpixiedusttravel.com. Just follow the second star to the right straight on to your adventure. That's pinchofpixiedusttravel.com, where you're making memories one trip at a time.